Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org.
My dear Mrs. Posvar, I am excited to be chatting with you today. How are you?
I'm fine. You called me. So you are so formal.
Well, it's the tuxedo. You know, I kind of have to get a go with that. What do you prefer?
Well, I would have worn an evening gown had I known that you were going to be in a tuxedo.
We need our marketing managers need to get together and talk about that. Actually, but I think this is lovely.
Actually, I'm going to the Diamond Horseshoe Ball tonight.
Oh, very good. That's tonight.
Tonight.
With Pittsburgh Opera, yes, indeed. Now, what are you wearing for that?
Well, it happens to be St. John's outfit with a jacket that is shiny, shiny, shiny all over.
Wow. St. John himself wore this.
No, not at all. That's a designer.
Yeah, I'm sure you will do it wonderful justice. So, yeah, and that's the Diamond Horseshoe's been going for a while now. Do you attend regularly?
No, actually, I haven't been for quite some time.
This is going to be like Dolly Levi coming back to the Harmonia Gardens. It's an event.
Well, whatever you want to make of it. But I'm a guest of Carnegie Mellon.
Oh, very good.
And there's a Carnegie Mellon table, and a lot of my colleagues in the voice department were all there.
I want to hear all about it. Take good notes. I want to see who's who. And
who's who? Yeah. Well, you have to look at the scene page.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and I'll look for you there. Very good.
Well, you probably won't see me.
But you have had quite a career as an opera singer, not just you locally, all over the world. You were a featured performer for, I believe, 23 consecutive seasons at the Met.
You've done your homework
Well, it's impressive.
My goodness gracious.
And I think that even in the opera community, I mean, that's considered to be pretty impressive, yeah?
Well, I have to explain. In my era, which was the Rudolph Bing era, when he hired somebody, he hired them not just for one or two performances. He hired them, especially we American singers. He respected us so much. And he hired us, and he hired us for longevity and for growth. And I went from medium roles to big roles. Mm-hmm. And however, I don't seem to see that right now at the Met. It seems like we have an invasion of Russian and, and Ukrainian and Bulgarian and all sorts of Middle Eastern, Middle European, I should say, singers. And very little growth of hiring the American singers.
What do you think changed? Why did it develop into that?
Rudolph Bing thought that he was going to make it into a repertory theater. Mm. And so he wanted a ground nucleus of people there with some stars. Whereas I think now, I don't know who the nucleus are. I'm a little discouraged because I know of several singers who have finally gotten a Met contract. But what for? For a couple of evenings, couple of parts, and then that's over. And that's not the way I would run the opera company.
Well,
and thanks God I'm not running that opera company.
But you yourself have done a lot to promote opera and opera singers here in this city. You founded Opera Theater Pittsburgh in 1979.
Yes. 79? I thought it was 78.
Oh, let's fact check. 78. Our fact checker.
Yes.
You
yes,
are
yes.
on the ball. I did that just to check it
oh,
out. I want to make sure you were legitimate
really?
There.
Oh, come
yeah.
on.
I've already had a martini, so you've got to.
Oh, I see. Well.
But in 1978, you founded Opera Theater Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And I believe we're, in a sense, running that for a while.
My case is, how shall I start? My reason for starting the company was that I was very, very fortunate to be part of a fledgling opera company in Boston when I was a graduate student there. It was called the New England Opera Theater, and that's where my name comes from, absolutely. New England Opera Theater, and it was founded by Boris Goldovsky. And he was my mentor, and so under him I sang Carmen, Cherubino 25 times, Hänsel and Idomeneo and several other roles, so that when I got to Germany, I could say I have sung these roles. And it was a young professional company, and I could say I had sung it professionally. So they took me seriously and let me audition. And it's interesting, after I got through auditioning, they said, well, of course, you've studied in Europe. And I said, excuse me, there's just been a war. Mm. Oh, yes, of course. there was a war. But you come from German parents. Yes, that's why. That's why I could sing. Because in those days, they had absolutely no respect for American culture.
Wow.
And American singers and American education musically. That sure changed.
Mm.
Now they have nothing but respect for us, and we are still considered a good bet. So anyway, when I did sing in Germany, I realized how many opera companies there were all over the place, just for the Germans. And here I come from this United States of America, where I say we're the most talented nation in the world because we're all mixed up.
Yeah,
you
we
know?
Sure are.
We've got a little bit of Italian, a little bit of German, French, Irish, everything, and we're the best. I've convinced of it.
I'm with you.
Yeah. And anyway, I saw that they had this opportunity, and I was having this opportunity in Germany, and was hired after 1 year by Rudolf Bing, after 1 year in Germany, because I had European experience.
Mm.
So when my career started wending, I And I came here to Pittsburgh, and they asked me to be on this board and that board. And by the way, I never knew that being on a board meant you had to go to meetings.
I think that's the first rule, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Mendelssohn Choir that I accepted. And about a year after it, they said that I no longer needed to be on the board.
Oh.
But I never went to a meeting. I just didn't know that I was supposed to go to a meeting. It was the other side of the world for me. I was used to performing, and everything was arranged. I had no idea that all those people were working so hard to make it possible for me to get up and make a damn fool of myself.
Oh.
So anyway, one of the boards I was asked to be on was the Gateway to Music,
mm-hmm.
It was called then. And they said to me, the schools want opera, and would I oversee it? So I don't know if I put an ad in the paper or how I got this, but I auditioned singers and picked two quartets so that they could cover themselves. So I had two sopranos, two mezzos, two tenors, two baritones. And I arranged for a shortened 45 minutes, had to be, version of Così fan tutte, Mozart opera. And that first year, we had 90 performances in the schools.
Wow.
The kids were really making good money, because we'd do a couple a day. And I got involved with their development, with doing it 90 performances. And I said, oh, they deserve to do it the right way. So I got, where did I get that? I can't remember. Where I got a set, a very easy set of three, what is this arbor that you have in the gardens?
Oh, like an arborvitae?
Yeah, or yeah. Three of them.
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three in the middle. And started staging it. And I would sell it for, I think, for colleges for $800. $100 for each of the singers, and $100 for the gas, and $100 for the guy who, oh, for the pianist, and for the sets and costumes. But anyway, I got hooked. And so finally I found myself with an opera company. Actually, sending them off got me kind of scared, because I realized, you know, they could be in an accident or something like that. So I just had to legitimize it more. And so they were insured. And then we went off and did all sorts of things. And in those days, I did all the staging and the hiring and the coaching and everything. And you can imagine how grateful I was when the opera started growing and we came across Jonathan Eaton.
Oh yeah, we had him on the show here a couple of months ago.
Yes.
And he took over in 99.
Is that when?
I think. We can fact check that too. Our fact checker is nodding.
So he's been with us 15 years.
Hmm?
15 years. wonderful years.
Was it difficult for you to pass the torch?
Oh, no.
You were ready.
Not at all. I was ready. No, and of course, I had no training. And when it came to lighting and sets and things, I was in a territory that I didn't know. As far as staging, I only staged things that I knew well.
But from 78 to 99, I mean, you must have done something right. It was about over 20 years.
Well, actually, I started hiring.
You knew who to hire.
Yeah, I hired conductors and stage directors. Yeah. We were at the Byam then, and we were doing an American. We were doing Susanna and A Ballad of Baby Doe and things of that sort.
So by the time you founded Opera Theater Pittsburgh, were you yourself performing anymore at this point?
Yes, but not as much. And it was interesting because I had this other career as the so-called First Lady of Pitt. My husband was chancellor at the time, and I got to meet a lot of CEOs and people, foundation people, and which didn't hurt at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember calling up one quivering voice, and the CEO at the other end says, "Okay, Billy, what do you want?"
"We'll give you anything."
And what another CEO who I sat down to talk to, I couldn't possibly bring out the fact that I wanted money. I was just, my tongue was just stuck. And he kept saying, "What do you want? What do you want, Millie? Millie, what do you want?" And so finally he said, "Well, $1,000 help." And I said, I nearly fainted. I mean, this company started so small.
And look at it today. Well, on the topic of Mr. Posvar, when our bartender poured these martinis, I think you'd mentioned that martinis were responsible for getting you married. What's the story there?
Well, my husband was a martini drinker, and I don't think I was a drinker of any kind at that point. And the martinis got me married.
How many did it take?
I think I was already happy on two. And I haven't drunk them since.
Oh, until today.
Until today.
Well, cheers. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Now, is it true that you sang at the White House?
Mm-hmm.
How was that? And what president was it that loved opera so much?
Nixon.
Really?
Yes. Well, he was probably carrying on Kennedy had done. You know, I was singing in Vienna when Kennedy was assassinated. And I was eating at the Sacher Hotel across the street from the opera house. And the waiter came up to me and he said, "I'm so sorry about your president." And I said, "Why? What's wrong with my president?" And he said in German, it was an attentat, a word I had never heard before, attentat. And so he said, you know, bang, bang, tot.
Wow.
So then it's, everybody has stories about where they were,
oh, yeah,
when they were, and how their reaction was. I found myself in my hotel room in Germany, in Austria, Hungary, Austria in Vienna, just pacing back and forth and crying, and crying. But anyway, the Germans were wonderful. They stopped a performance that evening, came out in front of the curtain and announced it and stopped the performance. And all the streets, the shops were draped in black and had pictures of him. It was amazing.
And did you have to perform shortly after that, hearing that news?
Yes. I had one more performance.
Was it difficult to go on, knowing what had transpired in the United States?
I guess so, but I guess I...
The show managed. Must go on?
Yeah, I guess I managed.
Now, of all the places that you've performed, the... brilliant artists that you've worked with, the recordings that you've made, what do you feel is your greatest accomplishment?
Well, I had a passion, an obsession of a particular role. It was Der Rosenkavalier by Strauss. I don't know if you know it. You know it.
I know to hear it, I think, you know.
Yes. And it's the part of a young man, of which, you know, I did a lot of boys' roles. And
young, that's not unusual, man. Is it?
No, it's not unusual. It was considered in the 18th, 19th century. Attractive to see a woman's legs because they wore all those great big full skirts and nobody knew what was happening under there.
So if she got to play a boy, that's how you got to see the legs?
You
is
got
that
to
it?
See the legs and the hips. How about that?
Well, so, that put, so, filled the seats, right?
So according to Boris Goldovsky, it was also a box office. Trick.
Mm.
So, but where was I?
Your greatest accomplishment, and I'm thinking it might be this role.
Yeah, it was this role. And things kept happening that I wouldn't get it. You know, I would be slated, I was contracted for it, and something would happen. So finally, at the Met, I got to do it for the first time. And that is very unusual, too, that one gets to perform as difficult a role as this for the first time at the Metropolitan.
Wow.
Rudolph Bing, who did like me, and when he found out that I had never performed it, he called a special orchestra rehearsal just for me.
Mm.
And it was stage rehearsal with orchestra.
Wow.
And when the music started up, I started to tear up. And I said, you know, this is what you've been waiting for. And I had to kick myself in the pants and say, come on, you can't get emotional about this. Got a job to do. Which is kind of sad in the end, because, you know, it when it's all over, you could say, wasn't that great, fun, a wonderful experience. But during it, you got to have all your
mm-hmm.
thoughts there.
It's So that was your one of your greatest triumphs, was that role?
Yes.
Congratulations on that. How many times did you get to play it?
About 10.
Yeah.
Whereas the role of Cherubino, which is the youngster of Rose and Cavalier, sort of the same role in Mozart at a younger age, I did that about 65 times at the Met.
And education has become an important part of your career now. You've taught master classes all around the country. And now whenever I hear the term master class and opera together, you know who I think of is Maria Callas, because of the famous play of the same name written about her master class.
Yes.
What do you and Callas have in common?
We both sang at the Metropolitan Opera.
Okay, all right. Good answer, period. Safe answer.
Yeah, safe answer.
But you teach at Carnegie Mellon.
Yes, and I just received a certificate. I've been teaching there for 15 years.
Congratulations.
I can't believe it. You know, I came here at Carnegie Mellon to substitute for Mimi Lerner, who was ill. She had a terrible bout with cancer, and so I would take over her pupils. And so even before she passed away, they hired me. So I was very pleased about that. I'm enjoying it immensely. Actually, it's what's keeping me alive and has me at this tender age.
So in, you know, imparting wisdom and encouragement to your students here at Carnegie Mellon, looking back, what do you feel was maybe the most valuable piece of advice that was given to you or lesson that was passed on to you in your career?
Well, I just gave it. I just gave it to a very fine student of mine just this week. My manager said to me, always thank you. Write a thank you note, a thank you letter for anybody who has done anything for you. That and never be late. And between the two of them, I've really, really listened.
That's good advice.
Yes.
And there's also another event here in Pittsburgh that carries your name, that really helps give blossoming opera singers a big career boost, and that is the Mildred Miller International Voice Competition. How did this come about?
I don't know. It was something that Jonathan Eaton thought of. We became a summer fest, summer festival in which we are dormant in the winter. So this was one of the things that makes is a good reminder that we're still here and are alive. The Mildred Miller competition is incredibly successful. We had over 220 contestants.
And from all around the world.
From all around the world.
Come here to Pittsburgh.
Yes, come here to Pittsburgh. And we, Jonathan picks 25 for the semifinals, and I think we go to 5 or 8 or something like that for the finals.
And the finals are open to the public. We can come and see them.
Oh,
perform.
Yes.
So it's kind of like American Idol a little bit, except classier.
Yeah, well, yeah, except classier. Oh, gosh, I wish we were on television.
I think it has the potential.
I it just belongs on television. After all, there is too much time given in on radio and television to the popular music and the classical. By the way, I used to be on television all the time with the Voice of Firestone and the Bell Telephone Hour. And my gosh, what that did for building up a reputation. Now we just hardly know who those great ones are.
But you know, a competition like this is, you know, I think really putting a lot of good energy into that. We do have to get it on television, though. I think that's...
Let's talk
to Mr. Eaton about that.
Well, Mr. Eaton, we need to talk to some CEO.
Yeah, now call up some of your old connections there, all those CEOs.
They're no longer there.
Oh, somebody took their place.
They're all retired.
But now with the competition, what is the prize? What is everybody after when they compete in this?
$5,000 and a leading role at the Summer Festival here in Pittsburgh next summer.
Pretty good. And bragging rights, of course. I mean, that's a nice star to put on your resume.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
And our first three winners for the first 3 years.
Because this will be the fourth year.
Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Are just doing beautifully. I remember how we debated whether to give it to a countertenor, which we were just not prepared to. We think soprano, mezzo, tenor, bass, baritone, or whatever. But a countertenor? Do you know what a countertenor is?
I could guess, but I would probably be wrong.
What do you think it is?
Something having to do with your kitchen counter? No, I know that's not it. Maybe a tenor that is kind of maybe between that and the next vocal level, or maybe like an in-between?
Well,
you're not a tenor, you're not a bass, you're a counter tenor.
If you can believe it, in the 16th, 17th centuries, little boys who had wonderful soprano roles were castrated so that their beautiful soprano voices would stay with them as adults. Isn't that horrible?
I think I need a drink. Did it work? I mean, is that legit? I always thought
it was kind of
like a myth.
It worked.
That really, they did that and
they did that.
Oh my gosh. So don't tell me that's what a countertenor is.
Now, what it is technically is, do you know what a falsetto voice is?
Oh, when you sort of feel like...
Yes. Hmm. Now, they have learned to develop that upper register and make it really quite beautiful. And it sounds just like the early countertenors.
Wow. So there's a career in that. Tim kind of did that a little bit. Do you remember him?
Tiptoe
through the tulips.
Oh, my mother used to sing that.
I'm sure she sang it a lot better than he did, though.
Well... No, she couldn't carry it, too.
Oh, my gosh. So the musical talent doesn't run in your family, necessarily.
No, from my daddy.
Oh, okay. He was...
My daddy had 9 fingers. Actually, 9 and a half fingers. And he played the piano by ear.
To make up for that extra finger?
Yeah.
Was that a joke, or was that... Like, are you telling the truth?
No, I'm telling you the truth.
Okay.
He played... He had... what is that? Starts with a T. A disease that was in the World War.
Oh.
First World War.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
But you kind of lose your...
Yes.
Because circulation, it's like a circulation thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to have to look it up. I've known that there's some that do have complications from diabetes that have lost, like, toes and things.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that.
Yeah, something. Well, I didn't know that. That's a fact about you, that you come from a musical father who played quite well with 9 fingers.
Yeah.
Now, on the competition again, you have been a judge for this competition.
Yes, and I will be a judge for again.
So what do you look for in a contestant?
Una voce, the voice.
The it.
The it. Then we look at everything else.
Hmm. And I would...
And our last particular winner, Elizabeth Baldwin, she was that kind of winner in which she opened up her mouth and everybody would say, my God, there's an opera singer.
Wow.
She was a real opera singer.
I would guess it's maybe a little hard to articulate what makes that, you know, that it factor. But you know it the minute they start to sing, I suppose.
Yes.
Oh, good. So we're kind of winding down. I think we're down to a couple finalists at this point because we're approaching the finals, which we can all attend and see. And so, yeah, it's kind of getting tense now. So you've seen, you've judged portions of this already this year. So how's it looking? Who, what do we got in the finals to look forward to? Oh, we've got to go see and be surprised. Okay.
I'm not good at telling.
All right. So we got to turn out for this. And we will, indeed.
Good, good.
So I think just to look at forward into Summerfest coming up. Summerfest 2014 was a blast. We had Jonathan Eaton on the show chatting about it before the season opened. They had a great, great season. So what's in store for 2015?
Another great season,
yeah,
of course.
Well, of course, of course.
I'm going to do another Strauss.
Oh, very good.
I think we should say why we are doing another Strauss. We have a board member, Jerry Slack, who is giving us $25,000 towards our production.
That's a good reason to do Strauss.
And that's a good reason.
And, and Jerry knows to go to the meetings, right?
Okay. Jerry goes to the meetings, too. I know. And I think we're probably going to go back to Mozart again. Hmm. And we just might do The Marriage of Figaro.
Just might.
Just might.
Well, I think it's a good possibility.
It's a good possibility.
I enjoy that opera, I do. You know, the one thing that strikes me, and Jonathan Eaton and I chatted a lot about this, about how much opera there is here in this city.
Isn't it incredible?
And the one topic we brought up, too, is that there are major cities larger than Pittsburgh that, in fact, are losing their one opera company, and yet we have so much here. What do you attribute that to?
Well, let me think. I should have.
Well, I'll tell you what Jonathan Eaton said. The first thing he said was, well, first, it's a beautiful city. Let's get that out of the way. So that was the first thing. And then number two was that there's a lot of funding here. There's a lot of foundation support.
Oh, yes. God bless our foundations. I appreciate so much their supporting me over these many, many years. From tiny little school shows to this company.
Now, my last question for you today. You keep incredibly busy. I think like on a weekend you probably have a more packed schedule than I do.
I was at the football game last night.
Well, see, I wasn't. Of course you were there.
And I'm going to the Diamond Horseshoe Ball tonight.
Tonight, right. From the football to Diamond Horseshoe. See, you're everywhere. You're a lady about town. So what do you do just to relax, just to take it easy with some time to yourself? What really gives you peace?
Well, I do have a place out in the country, and I like to go out there. But when I go out there, I cook.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's your specialty?
I used to have specialties, but I don't.
Now it's whatever you're in the mood for.
Yeah. I'm not. I get very tired cooking.
Yeah, it is work.
It's work.
And the cleaning's the worst because you got it all done. It's beautiful, and now you've used 30 pots and pans, and it's almost no fun.
Well, I usually have my daughters cleaning up.
There you go. See, I knew you'd have a plan.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, cheers.
I drank all of mine.
You look at this. Nobody's ever beat me before. Look at this.
Yes.
Wow. Well, cheers to you and all the future success of your students, Opera Theater Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
And the Mildred Miller International Voice Competition. We're going to look forward to a great winner this year.
Thank you, Brian.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, anytime. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvavant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvavant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvavant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.